Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Immortal World by Loretta Hignett, narrated by Julianne Irons. Chapter 1. The ragged, broken bit of horn grated against my spleen as I walked. I could feel it grinding up against my other internal organs, too. The splinters pricked my liver, causing lightning bolt strikes of intense pain right through my gut. The horn's tip stuck out through my lower back, making a little tent in my purple shirt, right near my kidney. My shirt hadn't started out purple. This morning, when I put it on, it was blue. Blue soaked in a gallon of my own red blood makes purple. Every single movement I made caused the horn to shift inside me, causing even more damage. But I had to keep moving. Each little stab, each tear and puncture drove me demented. Every wound healed nearly instantly, providing brand new flesh and shiny new organs to mingle as the horn bounced around inside me. I bit my lip and kept limping forward. The horse behind me nudged me with his nose. I shot him a look over my shoulder. "Oh, you're sorry? Of course you're sorry," I muttered. I limped forward. "Stupid horse." The horse whickered and nudged me again. "Well, that's what you are now, aren't you? You're just a horse." He huffed on my shoulder. His hot breath smelled like fresh bread straight out of the oven, sweet like borage or cinnamon rolls. I glared at him. "You might smell like a unicorn," I said, "but without your horn, you're nothing. Nothing, you hear me?" Gently, the horse nibbled my shoulder, nudging me forward. I sighed. "Yeah, I'm getting help. I'm going as fast as I can. I would go a lot faster if I wasn't impaled by your horn, but we can't always get what we want, can we?" The horse whickered softly in agreement. I inched along down Main Street. The horse followed me the whole way, and I thanked my lucky stars that it was a quiet morning in Emerald Valley. The clip-clop of his hooves echoed around the empty streets. None of the shops were open. It was only 8:30, and the sun hadn't poked its head over the eastern ridge yet. Emerald Valley was a geographical oddity. The bottom of the valley sat well below sea level, and the ridge curved around the whole town into an almost bowl shape. It felt like we lived in a terrarium. It was warm, humid, very green, and very private, sheltered away from the rest of the world. It was perhaps for this reason the valley attracted strange creatures. Or maybe it was the fact that right in the center of town there was the dip, an access point for the flow of energy that surrounded our world, keeping our dimension separate from all others. The dip was the bane of my existence. Things from other dimensions kept blundering through, and I'd spent the last few months rounding them up and throwing them back before they did any damage to themselves or to anyone else. The horse behind me was a great example. I limped along until I reached the store on the corner and pushed the door open. The horse followed me in. The reception desk was empty. I frowned. I had been counting on him to be here. Damn. An outraged gasp from the waiting room caught my attention. I looked. A middle-aged woman with a fluffy white Pekingese on her knee glared at me, her mouth wide open. "Hey, you! You can't bring a horse in here!" I smirked at the horse. "See?" I whispered to him. "Horse." The Pekingese yipped. The woman clutched him to her bosom. "He's scaring my cuddles!" "I'm not bringing the horse in here," I told her, wincing as I turned. "He's following me. If you've got a problem with him, you can tell him to his face." The horse turned to face her, fixing her with his black-eyed glare. Menacingly, he lifted one hoof and dropped it. I was expecting it. His hooves were razor-sharp and looked heavy as hell. But even I flinched at the noise it made when it hit the polished concrete floor. The woman's eyes widened, and she went white. Footsteps echoed from the hallway behind the reception desk, and I winced in pain again as I turned towards the noise.
"Imogen!"
The jolly older man's voice joined his footsteps.
"You have a horse. How lovely!
Jameson shimmied around to the reception desk and joined me in the waiting room. Today, he was dressed in cherry red scrubs. Paired with his neatly trimmed gray beard, it made him look a little like Santa. Without a trace of fear, he stroked the animal's long nose.
Did you just get him?
Not exactly, I replied. More like he got me. The old vet glanced at me puzzled.
What do you mean?
I nodded meaningfully. I think I might need an urgent appointment. The woman in the waiting room squawked.
Oh, no! I'm first! My Cuddles needs examining. She has a tummy ache again.
She brought the little dog up to her face, letting it lick her. The dog's fat pink tongue darted inside the woman's mouth as she spoke.
Don't you, my little baby. You have a little tummy ache. My little baby cakes. My little fluffy wuffy wuff.
I retched and looked away. Jameson squinted at me.
Are you okay?
Whatever it is, it will have to wait.
The woman got to her feet, holding the white dog in her arms.
I made an appointment. I was here first. You will have to wait.
We both ignored her. Jameson looked me over carefully.
A lovely shirt you've got there, he said. Blue?
I nodded.
You got it.
That's a purple shirt, the woman squawked. And I was first!
Jameson turned to her with an exasperated expression on his face.
Mrs. Popple, I've told you 12 times that Cuddles does not need to be examined. He does not have colic. He doesn't have irritable bowel syndrome. He doesn't have anxiety. He does not need any more shots.
He is unwell, she cried, clutching the dog to her bosom. He is a delicate dog.
That's because you kept feeding him white chocolates.
He gave her a stern look.
I know you do. Carol Anderson saw you feeding them to him last week.
The woman squealed.
I do not!
Have you heard of Munchausen's by proxy? I think you have that. Go home, Google it, then get that dog a crate and some organic kibble and mince. And get yourself some therapy, he added sharply.
He turned to me.
Come on through, Miss Gray.
I limped down the hallway. The horse followed, breathing heavily on the back of my neck. Jameson led us out the back to the warehouse, where dog crates were stacked up along one side of the wall, thankfully all empty. He gestured to an examination table near the other wall.
Who should I start with, you or the horse?
Me first, I said.
I turned around, wincing as the horn pierced my intestine. I lifted my shirt. Jameson gasped.
What the hell is that?
It's a horn.
Why do you have a horn growing out of your back?
I sighed. It's not mine. It belongs to this jerk. I pointed my thumb towards the horse. Jameson moved closer, lifting my shirt.
I don't understand. There's no trace of a wound. The flesh around the horn is healthy and pink.
That's because it keeps healing me. The horn has healing properties. Jameson lifted his eyes to heaven and cussed lightly.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Jameson knew about the supernatural element in Emerald Valley. As former mayor, he'd had to deal with a couple of supernatural issues that had cropped up during his tenure. I would imagine it would be easy for a cowardly mayor to ignore the Vampire King building a country club on the west ridge of the valley. But Jameson, perhaps worried that some of the townsfolk were about to be eaten, had bravely confronted the king and asked him to leave the local people alone. Since then, he'd tried to stick his head in the sand, preferring not to know any more than was strictly necessary. It wasn't that he was frightened of the supernatural. For Jameson, the world was exotic and fascinating enough exactly the way it was. We fondly called him a Chief Swan, named after the famous character who cared very deeply about everyone, but did not need to know any more.
I'm sorry, I said. I know it's hard to take in.
It's okay.
He took a breath.
I'm getting used to it.
He turned towards my new horse friend.
Did you do this?
The horse dropped his head, looking ashamed, and gave a deep whicker.
I see.
Jameson's fingers scratched at his forelock. Finding a nub there, he separated the silky tuft of the mane to get a closer look.
It's broken clean off, has it?
Yep. I clutched at my side, groaning.
A unicorn. I'll be damned.
You can't call him a unicorn, Doc, I said, glaring at my new friend. He's a horse. No horn, no unicorn.
Where did you find him?
He was in Sanjay Sarko's paddock sniffing around. He probably fell through the portal last night and was attracted by the old Bonacon scent. They're in a similar realm, so it would have smelt familiar. Sanjay called Benson in a panic. He's got a breathwork group staying there this weekend. They all had magic mushrooms yesterday, and they saw a unicorn today, so now they all think they're going to be tripping out forever. Jameson ran his expert gaze over me again. He lifted my shirt and turned in a circle.
He stabbed you in the belly, yes? And it's gone all the way into you?
His fingers ran lightly over the unblemished, blood-sticky skin on my stomach. I nodded.
And it came out the back. It's healed at the front.
He stole another glance at the horse.
He doesn't seem aggressive.
He's not. I may have snuck up on him. He reared up at the last moment and stabbed me by accident. We're both sorry about it. We've already made our apologies. Jameson squinted.
Can he understand you?
It seems so. If I'd known that he was so intelligent, I wouldn't have snuck up on him. I would have just asked him if he wanted someone to guide him home. I hadn't seen a unicorn in thousands of years, and what I had seen were just glimpses from afar. They kept away from humans and the human realm as much as possible, having been hunted to almost extinction for their horns, which had magical healing properties. What I knew of them mainly came from gossip. They were supposed to be vicious, flesh-eating beasts, so I snuck up on him with a rope. He'd rammed his head up, sticking his horn directly into my gut where it broke off. I fully expected him to paw at me with the iron-heavy hooves and tear the horn out of my gut with his teeth, but he just nudged me gently, huffing over me with his hot brioche breath, an overwhelming sense of sadness and remorse emanating from him like vapor. I felt so bad for the poor guy. He was lost in a strange land without his horn.
I have to get this thing out of me and stick it back on him somehow, I said through gritted teeth. He can't go home without his horn. And you can't go through life with a unicorn horn sticking out your backside, can you, miss?
Jameson gave me a wink.
Hop up on the table and lie face down.
I complied, grunting with pain as the horn mangled my internal organs.
So, he said conversationally, you didn't call Mr. D'Estacio to help you?
I lay my head down on the table, shaking with the effort of not crying out.
He's in New York, on business. He's coming back tonight. We've got a date.
I frowned.
I could have called him, I suppose, but he's got a multi-billion-dollar company to run. I keep forgetting that thousands and thousands of people rely on him for their livelihood.
Jameson examined my back, gently prodding at the horn.
That thing is stuck right in there, isn't it?
He muttered to himself.
It's almost like it's a part of you. I suppose it wouldn't hurt so much if it was anchored to something. Except it's not. It's bouncing around my organs, piercing everything it can, and then healing it all straight away. It's like my liver and intestines are playing tennis with it.
I shifted on the table and winced as the horn sliced into my spleen. The former unicorn nibbled on my calf muscle. His rubbery lips felt weird, but they gave me a little comfort. Jameson pulled a set of high-tech-looking goggles out of the drawer and slipped them on. His eyes looked huge through the lenses.
Let's see what this thing is made of.
He bent down over my back to examine the piece of horn that protruded out near my spine.
Keratin or bone? Ah, it's keratin. That makes sense.
He gently touched the horn and let out a whistle.
Oh, it's sharp,
he said, rubbing his fingers together.
That's strange. It's not just the tip. The whole thing is sharp, but there's no defined edges other than the tip. It defies the laws of physics.
He chuckled uncomfortably.
But natural laws don't tend to apply to you, do they?
I winced.
Nope.
He glanced down and met my eye.
Why didn't you pull it out yourself?
I bit my lip. It hurts too much. You have to pull it out slowly, so that it has a chance to heal the ripped flesh as it comes out. If you take it out too fast, the horn's healing properties won't get a chance to work. I'll be left with a huge stab wound that will heal in a couple of days, but it will hurt the whole time. Besides, I added, someone has to stick the horn back on the horse and make him into a unicorn again, and throw him back through the portal. There's no one else strong enough to do it besides Raphael, and he's out of town. He bent to examine the horn again.
Do you want me to ask Backman? She could do it. She's got her hands full. Marigold is still healing from her last escapade, and Backman won't leave her side. I didn't want to bother her.
He glanced at me briefly, his brow furrowed.
They came to me when she was injured. I stitched up a few of her deeper cuts and x-rayed her bones to make sure everything would heal properly. You know, he said sternly, we do have a good doctor in this town. He's a regular GP. His surgery is just down the street.
I grinned humorlessly. What do you think he'd say if I walked into his surgery, leading a maimed unicorn in behind me? He'd tell me to come here. That's what he'd do.
Huh.
Jameson shook his head.
You've got me there, my dear. And to be fair, I suppose Marigold was delivered to this clinic in the arms of an oversized grizzly bear.
His grin faded.
I didn't ask what had happened. Grizzly bears are not very talkative.
I'll give you the short version. Leroy accidentally summoned a homicidal fairy prince through the dip, and he wouldn't leave until he banged Raphael. I wouldn't let him, so he played a few horrible tricks on us, which culminated in him luring us to a pocket dimension, where he forced us to do battle in a gladiator ring. Marigold used her secret demon powers to stun the prince, and I was going to kill him, but he blew us all up. I managed to bust us out of the pocket dimension. Jameson stared at me. Oh, and Leroy managed to call the prince's mom here to come and get him. She was horrified that he'd come here to mess with us lowly humans. There was a long pause. Finally, Jameson lifted his eyes to the ceiling.
Secret demon powers?
Oh, you can forget I said that. No, actually, I added. I'll just say it real quickly so it's in your peripheral knowledge bank. You might need to know it one day, I went on, ignoring Jameson's look of horror. Marigold's mother was raped by a man who was possessed by a demon, and it seems that a little of his power was infused into her at conception. It doesn't mean that she's evil, of course. She's just got a little extra juice. She's conflicted about it, though. What, with the whole good witch turning evil blood witch thing? If she ever moved over to the dark side, she's got a nuclear power station worth of energy she could call on to do her business. I grinned at him. Let's just hope she never wanders over to the dark side, huh?
Okay, okay.
Jameson waved his arm through the air, cutting me off.
It's fine, it's fine. I don't need to know.
I shrugged and whimpered as the horn moved around inside me, slicing my insides again.
Suits me.
The words came out in a whimper. Jameson sighed, turned around, and started to load up a silver tray with utensils.
Tell me about something pleasant, Imogen. How are things going between you and Raphael D'Estacio, anyway? I hear he's very sweet on you.
Oh, fine, I guess. I bit my lip.
Fine?
I turned my head and looked at him, trying to keep my expression neutral.
Yeah, I guess.
He looked at me carefully.
I think you might need some pain relief.
He rummaged around in the drawers behind me. After a moment, I felt a prick in my arm, and a warm, drunk feeling spread throughout my body.
There you go.
Ah. My mouth went slack. I hadn't realized how tight I was holding it. Instantly, the pain eased, and I felt more relaxed than I had in a long time. The fear and anxiety I carried around, since Raphael asked me to be his mate, retreated to the back of my mind. It was still there, still present, but right now, with the drugs rushing through my veins, I felt like I'd put a dangerous dog in a crate, just to give myself a bit of breathing room. A dog. A black dog. That's what they called depression, wasn't it? My dog wasn't black. It wasn't made of nightmares. My dog was all sharp edges and gnashing teeth, harsh, vivid colors that bled into everything in my life. My dog wasn't depression. It was terror, constantly growling, always threatening to bite. I'd been bitten before. I knew what it felt like.
So things are fine with him?
Huh? My mouth felt slack. Jameson had said something. I needed to respond. My brain was fuzzy. Who?
I might have overdone it with the xylazine there. Whoops,
he chuckled.
At least I know you can take it.
He cleared his throat.
We were talking about your vampire friend. You were in a relationship?
Oh. My voice sounded strange. Deeper.
Yeah. He asked me to be his girlfriend, yes. More than that, though. He wants me to be his mate,
I said, slurring my words.
What does that mean? Huh? Mate? I don't know exactly. Maybe it means we're getting married like mortals do. I think. Except in public. That's what getting married is, Imogen. Usually you say your vows in public, in front of other people.
I giggled. It didn't hurt as much when I laughed now. The painkillers were doing an excellent job.
Hee hee. You're right. It is.
I nodded.
It is. But, I mean, like, with Raphael, it's more public. Because of how he's, like, the world's most eligible bachelor and a vampire king, I guess.
And that frightens you?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's been a few years since I was world famous.
I shrugged.
That doesn't bug me anymore. It would worry me if he couldn't protect me, but he can. He's a badass.
But you are hesitant, aren't you? Is it because he is a vampire?
Sort of. Any commitment with him is bound to go on longer than your average mortal marriage. But I don't know if that makes it less scary or more scary.
Jameson upended a bottle of iodine and pointlessly started dabbing it around the horn.
You've been married before?
Yeah, at least a couple dozen times.
The bottle clattered to the floor. Jameson shook his head.
I suppose I did ask.
Yep. Always ends the same way, too. My love gets ripped to shreds. Oh, wait! There was Horace. He died of dysentery. He literally shit himself to death. It was horrible. So...
The lights near the dog crates on the far wall glinted, throwing rainbows. It distracted me.
What was I saying?
You were saying you've loved and lost before.
Yep.
I nodded heavily. The weight of each loss settled on me, threatening to pull me into the crate with my terror dog. A strange noise sounded from behind me, and a hot breeze ran over my leg. What was that? Oh, the former unicorn was breathing on me again. It felt nice. He was trying to cheer me up.
Thanks, horse,
I cooed at him. He dropped his head so he could meet my eye and glared at me.
Ha ha! Horse!
Jameson cleared his throat.
So, he asked you to be his wife, so to speak. Did you say yes?
I nodded, my chin bouncing off the table. I barely felt it.
I did say yes.
My dog growled from the crate in the back of my mind.
I'm so scared, though, Jameson. So scared.
I don't blame you, Imogen. It's not the marriage part that's scary. It's losing the one you love or having them fall out of love with you. I've also been married a couple of times. Both times we grew apart and separated amicably. Now, he said, throwing the yellow-stained cotton balls into the trash, I can't imagine anyone falling out of love with you, so the only thing you have to worry about is losing the one you love.
Exactly, I nodded emphatically. Exactly. I can't go all in, because if I lose everything, I think that would be the thing that breaks me.
He rattled around in his drawer, bringing out a few more shiny utensils that glinted in the light. A rainbow flashed from a scalpel.
Ooh, I cooed. Pretty.
But you're always going to lose, Imogen. Nothing is permanent. Even you. No, wait.
He held up his hand when I started to protest.
Just listen. You've lost everything you've ever loved, but here you are again, falling in love. Not just with Raphael, but with Leroy, and with Marigold and Beckman, and even Father Benson. I see you, you know.
He smiled at me.
You love them all, but you're scared, so you're holding yourself back from loving them fully.
Except Leroy, I slurred. I love him fully already.
Even my own words surprised me. It was true, though.
Maybe because he was already a dead kid walking when I met him, I said. He already had no future. He was going to get tortured to death. I didn't want to take him with me, Doc. I would have left him there if I had my way.
I blinked.
That thought keeps me up at night.
Jameson winced.
Okay, so his life is much better with you in it. Can you imagine losing him?
All the time, I groaned. He has a nasty habit of getting himself into the worst trouble.
But you're always there to pull him out of it.
Well, kind of. He sorted out the Fae problem by himself.
So his life is better with you in it. Can you imagine that Raphael's life would be better with you in it, too?
I was silent for a minute.
I guess.
And Benson? That man would have been eaten by something nasty months ago if it wasn't for you.
He chuckled.
I don't wish to know everything that went on the night. The one where you lost half your body parts. But from what I can understand, you did something terribly brave that saved a lot of people.
I sighed.
Yeah, yeah. Even now, I still don't know why I did that. I threw myself under a bus, so to speak. Except instead of a bus, it was an evil witch opening a pathway to hell and certain doom.
Jameson shuddered.
Okay, I think the pep talk is over. Now, let's get this horn out of you.
He held up a pair of pliers.
This might sting a little.
As Jameson slowly inched the horn out of my insides, I distracted myself from the pain by thinking about what he'd said. I'd lived thousands of lifetimes, and I'd tried to love thousands of times, and each time it ended up in the worst kind of heartbreak. I'd been wooed, widowed, scorned, bereaved, and betrayed hundreds and hundreds of times. Every single heartbreak compounded, hardening me. First, I put caution tape around my heart. Then I fenced it off. Then I put barbed wire on top of the fence. And finally, I buried my heart in concrete and threw it into the sea, so no one would ever find it. It had been thousands of years since I'd let myself be loved, and Raphael just clicked his fingers and I was his. Leroy was to blame. I snorted to myself as Jameson tugged the unicorn horn out of me slowly. Leroy was the thin edge of the wedge. I'd let myself love him fully, and he'd swum to the bottom of the ocean, picked up my heart, chipped off the concrete and stripped away the fencing, ready for whoever wanted to come and pick it up.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?